Good evening, Rabbi Maevsky. Tonight's shiur is being learned, being sponsored by Refuah Shleima for Devorah Bas Malka Brocha and for Tinokes Bas Devorah. We wish them both well. May they have a Refuah Shleima b'mehera. Shavuos this week, we are one of the main issues that we do. We read the part. We read the Sefer Rus. And it's very interesting. Of course, the main reason that we read Rus is to highlight the life of David HaMelech. We have a tradition of his birth and passing over Shavuos. We're not sure exactly of the dates. Nevertheless, we know he lived a very full 70 years of life. And during the course of his life, he seemed to be a very driven person from the time. We don't know much about his very early life, but from the time that he was told that he would ascend the throne of Klal Yisrael, he never wavered for 1 minute on doing it. And where does that all the strength come from? And obviously, we focus back the fact that it comes from Shevet Yehuda, and Yehuda, of course, is a very driven man. But a man's roots don't only take shape through the course of his paternal ancestry, but it's also from a maternal ancestry on both sides, as we see by Moshe Rabbeinu with Amram and Yocheved and various other people. Their strength is given from both sides. And here we see something that's very interesting. When we begin the whole story of Rus, it's incredible when we think about the circumstances, how they develop. And the story begins, of course, Elimelech. Unfortunately, he's a very wealthy person. And when it says, the wording is very interesting because at the very beginning when it says, Vayhi b'mei shod ha-shoftim, the crime rate has obviously gone. We have gone through the roof. And the ishkalei yashar b'einav, people did what they felt. Things were bad by hero of Baretz, and as things got worse, as the stock market crashed, basically, people were destitute, and there was a lot of thievery and various other things going on. And Ein Melech, there was no king. And what it means when it says, what Chazal tell us that there was no king, Ein Melech b'Yisrael, it's telling us that there was no justice. There was no one leading the parade, basically, or in control of government. Every tribe was on its own, and people did what they felt like it. There was no police force, as we would expect, and the crime rate was going up. And Elimelech, being very much to himself, and we see that when he died, it says, Vatamas Elimelech Ishnami. He was not part of the community. We notice that when Yaakov passed away, it says, Rashi says right away at the beginning when it says, Vayetze Yaakov mi Bershava Vayelech Harona, that Panaziva, Panahoda, Panarosha, he left his mark on the community when he left, as opposed to Elimelech. The only person that Elimelech had an effect on, that they felt his loss at the end when he died, was Nomi and his children. The rest of the community, even there when he left, he was just another citizen. He helped nobody. All his wealth was spent on his own family. He did nothing for anybody else. He wasn't a charity giver. He didn't leave any mark on the community whatsoever. When he left town, it was like just any private citizen will leave town. He left no mark. And he was gone. And because of this, God felt that this was obviously a terrible sin, leaving him in this manner, leaving his community in the lurch. He just deserted a sinking ship. And this was to be reckoned with, certainly. And God acted, well, in our time frame, maybe not that swiftly, but relatively speaking, we don't know exactly how long it took. But he immediately died shortly thereafter, and Nomi is left with the two children. The children, not learning the lesson there, one would think perhaps Nomi sees that the fortunes have changed, but she's still afraid to go back to Eretz Yisrael. It's embarrassing at this point in time, since she left them in the lurch with all the money. It's rather embarrassing to go back, and she figures maybe she could reestablish her life with her two sons, and the two sons also, they're old enough to get married, and one would think maybe they would also complain and want to go home. But as it is, when it says at the beginning, when they, if the language says, Vayogar, when they went to live in the land, in the plains of Moab. Initially, they were there just to maybe ride out the storm of the bad economy, and then they would come back at a later date. But nevertheless, eventually, it says the word Vayeshev, and they stayed there. They became Moabites. They became part of the land, and this became their country. And that is a very significant change in status for all the people concerned. And once they adopted their living in Chutz La'aretz, they had to suffer all the things that go on in Chutz La'aretz. They're always better off in the land of Israel. And now Machlon and Chilion get married. The question is that normally, under normal circumstances, as we know as best as we can, that the elder child would get married first, but of course the younger one here gets married first. And which leaves us to the fact that why didn't the oldest son marry? Because Chazal are telling us over here there is a major machlokis about Machlon and Chilion, who they met, not who they married, but the people that they married. Did they undergo a conversion before they were married? Because that would present a problem, because should they have undergone a conversion before they get married, then why would Naomi would have no right to tell them to go back home to their God? She says, go back home to your God. And that would be a grave injustice, something Naomi would be speaking out of turn, because if they became Jewish people, then Jewish women, then they would be Jews and not to go home to their parents in the land of Moab. And therefore, what the Malbim is of the opinion that they remained, that they unfortunately they married two goyim, and that was their life. And it's a major sin, obviously, for them, the people of that upbringing from Shevet Yehuda and Machlon and Chilion. And one brother let the older brother, his younger brother, gets married first and says nothing and lets it ride. And then he, in turn, marries a goy. And unfortunately, this is where God says, I've had enough. And now both of their sons die. And now Naomi and Ruth are left. And we have to take a look at the aftermath of this tragedy that happens from a family that's riding so high and is trying to keep to themselves. I remember when I was young and I was with my father at an Alvaya, and all he did was I was listening to give the speech, and he was talking about the person who had just died. He was giving his speech on the funeral, and he was saying that he was highlighting all the things he did for his wife and children, how many things he did for them and everything. And I mentioned to my father afterwards, I noticed that you spoke about his wife and family, that this is the only accomplishments he had. What about his life? I mean, he's a man who lived into his 80s at that time. He said, I wouldn't lie. And that's the only people he had an effect on. He didn't do anything for anybody else. So I just wanted to be as nice as I could. And I said, he lived his life for his wife and his children, and that's all he focused on. He did not have an effect on anybody else, the society around him, the neighborhood that he grew up in, his people, his fellow Jews. He left no mark on society, except that he left them in the lurch when he could have supported the entire town in their time of trouble, but deserted them. And now Naomi and Ruth and Orpah are left. And they hear through the grapevine, so to speak, there's merchants traveling around. And at this point in time, the merchants, they hear talk that the market has been in an upswing and things have gotten better. Business is back to usual. And the salesmen are now traveling back to Eretz Yisrael and they're doing business as usual. And now comes time to return. It's a very difficult situation. We know when we have the famous saying is you can never go home again, and it's very true in a lot of ways, because what would happen to Naomi at this point in time, she's fully aware of the fact she was there for over 10 years now, and how is she feeling about going home? She's very reluctant. You would think to herself that she would have gone back earlier, once her husband took her away from Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, at this point in time, while a wife And those times certainly would have to listen to her husband when they pulled up stakes. She would, even if she would not be happy about leaving, she would have to follow him. But now that he has passed on, then why didn't she leave already then? So obviously the children weren't anxious to go back as well, and they remained, and she was, and she remained. So she has culpability at this point in time as well, and which brings us to the next point. Because when we see when Rus and Arpa escort her, because the initial plan was that Naomi was expecting just to be escorted to the borders of the land of Israel, and then they would turn around and go back home to their families. Arpa decides that it's okay, and she will go home back to as Naomi spurs her to go, and she does. But Rus dafka ba, and Rus hangs on and says, I'm sorry, I want to remain with you. And Naomi, of course, we know the Hilchos Geirus we talk about, tries to dissuade her, and she says all the right things, but she says, I want to go with you. But the fact is, we have to remember one thing that's very important. There's another thing that's here. The same way I told you that Naomi was very reluctant to go home because she had been a persona non grata now that she left her family and her townspeople in the lurch. What about Rus? Rus came from the daughter of Rus was the daughter of Eglon, and it's very interesting the way the use of language over here. Naomi says, "Go back to your mother." That's very interesting. One would think that the verbiage would be that it says to go back to your father's house. Instead, she goes back to her mother because I think they both realize that after Rus has been away from home for over 10 years now, the boys were married and they had been away for so many years, that she, the same way Naomi would be persona non grata when she came home, that Rus would face the same situation when she got home. Her father might say to her, now you're coming back? Who needs you? You deserted us and you became a Jew? You married a Jew? Please. We don't want you here anymore. And therefore, Naomi, being aware of this, says to Rus to go back to your mother. And we know that the mother would certainly be more sympathetic to her daughter, and she says, go back to your mother. Perhaps your mother will let you come back home. And that is what we're talking about over here. Both of these women are very strong women, and Naomi is trying to tell her, I can't help you. Because if you take a look at the language, and you don't have to analyze it that closely. And when Rus is telling her, why in the world do you even want to go home with me? If you're thinking you're young enough to get remarried, obviously that you can't marry any children that I would have. Because if you waited for me to have another child and wait for that child to grow up, then you would be too old to bear children for that person, and therefore he would never want to marry you. And in addition to that, and even if you would come back now and want to marry another Jewish person, do you think that you, as a Moabite woman, even have you converted to Judaism, who would want you, who also was part of the situation, part of the family of Naomi, who was so left the family in the lurch? If you're the daughter-in-law of Naomi, you would be as well persona non grata and mistreated, and I couldn't introduce you into society, basically, and you would be in the same situation as I am. My reputation would affect you as well, and you won't be able to be successful. But we see the difference in both of them, that they're both very strong-willed persons. Naomi was from Shevet Yehuda, being very strong-willed. And Rus, the daughter of a king, and also at this point in time, she had tremendous self-worth at this time. And she realized that she had made a new life for herself and was going to stick it out and make the best of it. And she is very forthright, and she's not ashamed. We know it's very difficult, especially if you're a daughter of a king. And not only that, but when you married all these years and you were married to the children of Naomi, who were wealthy people at that time, that you were used to living in the lap of luxury after that, and now for you to go home, to go with us and be in the community and be destitute, how will you survive? Will you be able to live through the rigors of going door to door? Imagine what a come down, especially, you know, many rich people who lose their fortune, but they don't become penniless. They can't live in the lifestyle to which they were. They don't live in a palace, so they move into a smaller home. They could move from a smaller home to an apartment, but they have some money left over. Nami did not have more than a piece of bread to eat. She came home with nothing. It's not as if she had from 20 servants now to only 5. She was destitute. And this is a major change. But Ruth had as much confidence in herself that she would be able to withstand and this whole situation. And together, when they hang on to their each other, Nami and Ruth, and they discuss the situation, and with the help of another person from Shevet Yehuda, who sees while they're collecting the droppings of the people in the field, the lechet is that falling from the bushels of wheat that are being collected. She's going around, and Boaz not only comes to tell her to make sure she doesn't go amongst the men who might give her a little bit of trouble. She's a young woman, and perhaps they might start up with her to stay with the women. And it seems, as according to the Malbim points out, that the men and women collected separately. There were fields that men collected in, and where areas of the fields were divided for men and women so that they didn't get into any trouble. But Boaz comes to her and says, you could eat. I have workers. We have a workhouse here that everybody sits down and eats lunch, and you could sit down and eat with them. And the amazing thing of Boaz is just to show the difference between Boaz and Elimelech family members, and that Boaz is saying that I will take care of you. Imagine you get a doorbell rings in your house and there's somebody collecting at the door, and instead of you just giving him a $5 or $10 tzedakah and saying I wish you well, you say to him, I don't want you collecting anymore. You come into my house and I will take care of your every need, and I will support you from now on. You don't have to ever go collecting again. And this is where we come from. This is Nomi's roots in Shevet Yehuda. And this is roots coming from the king of Eglon. And together, with the help of Boaz, certainly, who takes that great leap of faith and marries Ruth, and from there comes David HaMelech, who you would think with all the trouble that he had to live through before he became king, you would think that on a certain level he might say, I don't want it. This is too much trouble. I'm being hunted down like a dog. What do I need this for? I'm not interested in being a king anymore. But David HaMelech comes from royalty in a different manner. He comes from Yishai, true enough, but he comes from the gene pool of Yehuda. He comes from the gene pool of Rus. His maternal and paternal roots are both very strong and very forceful and self-confident. And David's faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu never wavered. And look what he managed to go through. And the beauty of the whole story is, in reality, is that Rus got to see, she lived to see David HaMelech ascend the throne. Nami, of course not, she was the elderly person at that time, but Ruth herself was able to sit in the throne room with David HaMelech, with her great-grandson, and enjoy the fruits of her labor, which she richly deserved. And we see that many gerim in society have certainly proved their worth. Of course, we all know about Unclus and various other people, but this is the beauty of seeking for the truth. And if one seeks for the truth without being a phony about it, one sees, my son had a chavrusa many years ago, and when he was going to the rabbinate, going for a smicha program, a boy who was a non-Jew and who had converted initially first. He came from a Christian royalty family, and then he was dissatisfied with Christianity and converted to become a Muslim for a couple of years. And then he He became very dissatisfied with Muslim, and he became a Jew in his 30s. And not only that, but he became a Jew and intelligent enough. He learned sufficiently enough to go for smicha and became a rabbi. He was well known and now lives in Toronto. He's a married person living in Toronto. And this is an incredible story. But he wrote a tremendous treatise on religion. And Ruth saw this, and she saw the way her mother-in-law acted, that this was certainly, as she was the seeker, the same way that Yisro was the seeker. She sought the truth, she found the truth, and she had the strength to live by her convictions. And she was richly rewarded by having a great grandson in David HaMelech. So when we sit down to eat on Shavuos, when we sit down to daven, and when we say Yisker for those who came before us, remember the roots of our family. David HaMelech remembered his roots. That's what gave him the strength from his great-grandmother who was at his side to live through all of these events that happened in the turmoil that he had to live through. And we should have the strength. May God give us the strength to live through all this turmoil and celebrate the anniversary of the giving of Matan Torah. Thank you, and have a good evening, and have a good Yom Tov.